Nanda Braja Janna Ranjana Yasoda Nanda Braja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tira Bharachari Jamuna Tira Bharachari Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Om Vishwanath Paramahamsa Parivrar Sarasu Shemadavacharita Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskand Pandacharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Premchikoho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Ki Jai Shri Radha Madhava Govindana Shamakunda Hakunda Giri Govindana Ki Jai Shri Vindam Shri Nathur Dham Ki Jai Shri Navadip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Shri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Gangamahi Jamunamai Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Sangha Veda Bhakti Vinda Ki Jai Harinama Sankirtan Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Shri Shri Krishna Janmastami Ki Jai Krishna Janmastami Mahotsav Ki Jai Jaini Jai Gaur Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees Glories to the assembled devotees Glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Glories to Srila Prabhupada Om Jnanam Tanatandasya Jnanam Jnanam Chalakaya Chakshur Mejham Tashmai Sri Guru Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutare Simati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nevishesha Sandavari Pasati Sathayine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Revealing from Sri Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, Text 9 and 10. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I read this, just read these two slogans, it's not on the board. Tam hadbhutam varkam abhukshanam chadha bhujam shankha gradyu dhadhyam shivatsalakman galasho vikastubhyam pitam bharam sandra payho jaso bhagham maharavaidurya kirita kundala Visha Purishvaka Sahasakun Palam Udamakansya Angara Kankadir Bhir Viro Chamanam Vasudeva Ayakshata. Translation Vasudeva. Vasudevan saw the newborn child who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes and who bore in his four hands the four weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gada and Padma. On his chest was the mark of Sri Vatsa, and on his neck the brilliant Kashtubha gem. Dressed in yellow, his body blackish like a dense cloud, his scattered hair fully grown, and his helmet and earrings sparkling uncommonly with the valuable gem Vaidurya. The child, decorated with a brilliant belt, armlets, bangles and other ornaments, appeared very wonderful. Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki jai. Actually, that was the wrong one. The one before he appeared. This is text 7 and 8. The demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood, and the clouds gathered in the sky and very mildly thundered, making sounds like those of the waves, the ocean's waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon, because Devaki was of the same category as Sri Krishna. As stated in Brahma Samhita 537 under Chinmaya Rasa, Tabeda Riva Nicharupta Yakala Goloka Eva Nipasati Lakatma Bhuto Govindamari Purusham Tamahambajamin. This verse indicates that Krishna and his entourage are of the same spiritual potency. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Krishna's father, his mother, his friends, the cowherd boys and the cows are all expansions of Krishna, as will be explained in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. When Brahma took away Krishna's associates to test the supremacy of Lord Krishna, the Lord expanded himself again into the forms of the many boys and calves, all of whom Brahma saw were Vishnumurtis. Devaki is also an expansion of Krishna, and therefore this verse says, Devakyam Devarupiyam Ripinyam Vishnu Sarva Guha Shaya. At the time of the Lord's appearance, the great sages and demigods, being pleased, began to shower flowers at the seashore. Was a sound of mild waves, and above the sea there were clouds in the sky which began to thunder very pleasingly. When things were adjusted like this, Lord Vishnu, who is residing in the heart of a living entity, appeared in the darkness of night as the Supreme Personality of Godhead before Devaki, who appeared as one of the demigoddesses. The appearance of Lord Vishnu at that time can be compared to the rising of the full moon in the sky on the eastern horizon. So here the appearance is where Lord Krishna took his birth at midnight in the prison house of Kansa in Mathura district from the womb of Devaki. Everything was before the appearance, everything became very pleasing. Everyone just felt great. You know, the atmosphere was just great. The Brahmins who had been restricted by Kansa, persecuted, they were feeling very happy. They were lighting fires, and the fires were just burning very, very peacefully. No breeze was moving the flames, and there was just a pleasing wind atmosphere. Everything was very, very nice. Feeling really good. Krishna is going to appear, so he creates a nice situation that he's going to appear in. Just like when Lord Chaitanya appeared here, this just before he appeared, this Nadia, because he was going to appear, became very opulent. Became very opulent. All kinds of opulence, knowledge, and but scriptural knowledge, but mainly materialistic. But otherwise, everyone became very happy and wealthy. And so he's created, and the Lord who we've heard. He appears as the he's appearing as the son of Devaki, because Devaki is an eternal associate of the Lord. It says she's the same. What's the word? Quality is the Lord. in other words, she's from the spiritual world. She's also a siddha, eternally perfect person with a spiritual body. of course, when the Krishna is talking about their previous birth as Prishnagarbha, and then he's talking about there's different aspects when the Lord appears, so others also. And his associates appear with him, then also other demigods also join, they become part of those forms. And when the Lord disappears and the devotees disappear, when they go back to the spiritual world, then those other entities that have joined them, they go back to their respective places also. So they join him for the Leela. But for in her original form, Devaki is the eternal mother of Krishna in Mathura and in the spiritual world also. So Krishna's going to come, but he's not going to touch the material energy. So he's appearing in the spiritual personality, Devaki. And wasn't an ordinary birth, although it says, first of all, the Lord appeared in the mind of Vasudev, husband. Of course, the Lord's everywhere, in the heart of every living entity. But he appeared, it means he manifested his presence, he made his presence, made Vasudev conscious of his presence within his body. Vasudev was glowing and he was feeling very ecstatic. He was feeling the Lord's presence inside him. And then the Lord transferred himself invisibly, nobody could see, but he transferred himself to the heart, to the mind of Devaki, or to the womb of Devaki. Nobody could see that. And then she became very ecstatic, very effulgent. Huh? So beautiful and effulgent that she just knew that the Supreme Lord was inside her. And now and then on this day she gives birth. Not ordinary birth, he just appears, just like he appeared in the mind of Devaki. Then from the mind he appeared in the womb of Vasudev. Then from the Vasudev's mind, then he appeared in the womb of Devaki. And now he's appeared outside the womb, not in the ordinary course. Because he's all fully dressed. He has a jeweled helmet, armlets, bangles, necklaces, long hair, very pleasing, very beautiful, yellow dress, completely dressed and perfect. So he just manifests himself from the womb to the outside. Now, it's very difficult to understand that, but the Lord is not conceivable, normally not conceivable to the ordinary senses. That's why people misunderstand Krishna as demons anyway. They always try to interpret Krishna according to their own paradigm. They can't understand. Krishna says he's mudhas, the fools, they don't they can't understand my transcendental nature. They don't understand that. They deride me because I descend in the human form, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Because I descend in the human life form, they think I'm like one of them. So when they hear about my transcendental wonderful activities, which is impossible for ordinary people, they don't believe it. So then they interpret it. This is what it actually means. This way they mislead themselves. They're misled and they mislead other people. But Krishna's like that. He has that prerogative. And also to keep the envious people away, then he lets them he lets them believe it. Because those who are envious of the Lord, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, those are envious, continuously he throws them into hellish species. Long time. You dare criticize my devotees and offend me? you're nobody in the material world, completely in illusion. I'm come here to give you, personally come to give you my darshans. Oh, maybe not you, if you're at that time. He personally comes. I give my darshan, I perform my activities. I don't have any business here. Why am I coming here? Why do I come here? Of course, he states in the Bhagavad Gita reasons why he comes, but to deny Sarunam, to kill the duskritinas who harass the devotees, to protect the devotees, to give the devotees some association from which they're hankering for. This is the main reason. And, you know, whenever there's a decline in religion, so Krishna states those things. That this is why he comes. But mainly it's for the devotees. But those people, after all that, he comes and shows himself, because otherwise people would never know who is the Lord. Just if he didn't actually appear, it'd be very, very difficult. If Krishna hadn't appeared, and those pastimes hadn't taken place on this planet, I doubt if I would be sitting here now just by reading some book about this is the supreme, the Lord is like this, is like this, is like this, and he acts like this. If he hadn't actually come down here and done those, performed those activities with eyewitnesses, therefore you got the history is there, then how could you? Be very difficult to believe, but because you have these actual eyewitnesses, or you know, people of or authority, or you know, people of character, and great personalities, then we have faith that the Lord did appear, and he did look like that, and he did act like this. Then we can accept. So this is why the Krishna comes. But if you're going to criticize him and think he's an ordinary person, you go to the hellish regions, you go in lower species. It means for millions and millions of years you won't cause any more mischief. You'll be in lower forms, you won't be able to disturb innocent people. So it's not an ordinary birth. And it's difficult to understand, of course. Krishna says, "Janma kama chame divyam idam yoga tatvadaha." That if one who understands the mystery of my birth and appearance and activities, he doesn't take birth again. So that's all one has to do if one wants to be free from cycle of birth and death, go back to God, is understand the mystery of Krishna's birth and his activities, disappearance, and you can go back to Godhead. But even that's quite difficult to come because Krishna is that. Okay, so he's dealing with Devaki Vasudev. Same category, I go on with the purport. So Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, the eighth day, Asta, Janma, birth, Asta, eight. The eighth day Krishna appeared, this is Sri Krishna, Janmastami, he appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon. It says a rising full moon in scripture. It says the objection may be raised, since Lord Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, then there could be no rising of the full moon. In answer to this, it may be said that Krishna appeared in the dynasty, which is in the hierarchy of the moon. Therefore, although the moon was incomplete on that night, because of the Lord's appearance in the dynasty, wherein the moon himself is himself the original person, the moon was in an overjoyous condition. So by the grace of Krishna, he could appear as a full moon. It was the eighth day, it was a waning moon going down, but some say it was a full moon. But here it's saying that the moon was so ecstatic, Krishna was born in the lunar dynasty, that the moon became full. It's like when Lord Chaitanya appeared, Lord Chaitanya is compared to the spotless moon, but the moon has spots. Although he appeared on a full moon, the moon closed, and there was an eclipse on that moon out of shame. But next to the spotless moon of Lord Chaitanya, was, anyway, is how the acharyas are commenting. Those are not in full knowledge that the appearance and disappearance of the Lord are transcendental, janma karma, chame divyam, are sometimes surprised that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can take birth as an ordinary child. Actually, however, the Lord's birth is never ordinary. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is already situated within the core of everyone's heart as Antaryami, the Supersoul. Thus, because he was present in full potency in Devaka's heart, he was also able to appear outside her body. He's already outside the body anyway, right? It says the Lord is in every atom. The Lord as a Supersoul, he's in between every atom. There is no place that Krishna is not. I mean, we don't have an instrument powerful enough to see a gap between Krishna. Krishna is a glue that holds everything together, makes everything work invisibly. So it's not a big thing for him to move from here to here as he likes. One of the 12 great personalities is Bhishmadev. He says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in the core of everyone's heart, just as the sun may be on everyone's head. Yet, although the sun may be on the head of millions and millions of people, this does not mean that the sun is variously situated. There's only one sun, but everyone can see the sun is directly above their heads. Similarly, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead has inconceivable potencies, he can be within everyone's heart and yet not be situated variously. The Lord is one, but he can appear in everyone's heart by his inconceivable potency. Thus, although the Lord was in the heart of Devaki, he appeared as her child. According to the Vishnu Purana, therefore, as quoted in the Vaishnava Toshani, the Lord appeared like the sun. The Brahma Samhita confirms that the Lord is situated even when the atom, antarasta paramanu chayantarastam, he is situated in Mathura, in Vaikuntha, and in the core of the heart. Therefore, one should clearly understand that he did not live like an ordinary child in the heart or the womb of Devaki, nor did he appear like an ordinary human child, although he seemed to do so in order to bewilder asuras like Kamsa. The asuras wrongly think that the Lord took birth like an ordinary child and passed away from this world like an ordinary man. Such asoic conceptions are rejected by persons in knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is Ajna, unborn, and He is the supreme controller of everything. Nonetheless, He appeared as a child of Devaki. This verse describes the inconceivable potency of the Lord who appeared like the full moon. Understanding the special significance of the appearance of the Supreme Godhead, one should never regard Him as having taken birth like an ordinary child. So the description here we just read in the next shloka, that He didn't appear like an ordinary chief. He appeared fully dressed, fully mature body. He can do that. So he's the one Lord. He's expanding Himself by His own desire, by His own different energies, and from the first expansion, is Krishna. He takes a step to the side, one side, and Krishna is still here, but he's taken a step there, and he's Balaram. That Krishna is called Balaram because he has slightly different activities, different mentality. He becomes the supreme servitor. He's not different from Krishna, but he's acting as a servitor of Krishna. And then, by Balaram's desire, then all the different Vishnus come. It's all the same person. It's the same person. But still, in materially, it can't be understood that in division, when you're dividing something, taking many from thing, it gets smaller and smaller. But it's not like that with Krishna. He's always complete, always perfect. Says in the spiritual world, 1 + 1 = 1, 1 - 1 = 1. for Krishna, that is always that same original person. And then he enters, you know. Then he creates the different energies. Then the material energy is created. He has the different shaktis. Again, he expands as the Krishna, as the Panchatattva. You got the Lord, his expansion. Then you got the avatar energy, and you have the internal energy, bhakti shakti, and then the jiva energy, tatastha shakti. They're all spiritual, but this is the different features of the Lord. How he reciprocates, he's reciprocating on that level. That's all the spiritual level. So therefore we have Shivas Thakur is the leader of the jivas. He's our guru, pure devotee. And Garadhab is the leader of the internal devotees, those on the spiritually all the Shakti Tattva, the eternal associates of the Lord. But it's all this. It's all coming from Krishna. It's all His idea, and He's personally present in all of those expansions. So He's doing everything, maintaining, controlling, creating, annihilating, and He's perfectly cognizant. And each of all of those expansions, they have exactly the same potency as Krishna. But they just display what is necessary for their particular avatar, for their particular purpose. But in Krishna, He displays everything. You can see everything in Krishna. Therefore, He's called the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because you can see more in Krishna than you can in Vishnu. Because Vishnu doesn't display those things, like His sweet pastimes, playing flutes and things like that. He doesn't do that. Therefore, Krishna is considered the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're all Godheads, all these Vishnu Tattvas, they're all Godheads. But who is the Supreme Personality? So that is Krishna. And this supreme personality. Because we're talking now, we're in Mathura, so there's a little difference in mood, a little difference in worship there, a little difference in the bhakti, the bhava of his devotees, because the Krishna's supreme personality is only revealed in Vrindavan, his supreme personality. Because that supreme personality, which is considered by the great souls, acharyas, the display of the Haladini Shakti, the greatest display of the Haladini Shakti, you'll find that in Vrindavan. So that love, sweetness, you'll find in complete form in Vrindavan. And Krishna reciprocates with that ambience of Vrindavan and those devotees who have that bhav of worshipping Krishna. You know, as a friend, as a lover, as a child, they have a parental relationship with him. But when he leaves Vrindavan, then he can't. There's no one in that particular ras, in that bhava, that can actually bring out that supreme personality, that sweetness that he shows in Vrindavan. Therefore it says Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Right? Krishna doesn't take a step outside of Vrindavan. But of course, we know he goes. Right? He crosses Jamuna, he goes to Mathura. Right? Then he moves to Dwarka. Who is it? If it's Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, then who is this other person who went to Mathura? No, it's Krishna. But it's not when he's outside, then he can't reveal his supreme personality, because no one has that power to actually bring that supreme personality out. So therefore, that's why it says Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Then that's why we say when he leaves, then he becomes Vasudev Krishna. Then he becomes God. When he's in Vrindavan, he's not God. I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's not God. He's actually the source of God. Because when our understanding of God, when we say God, we say the controller, the creator, the maintainer, the destroyer. That's a concept of God as being that. But Krishna's not doing that. He's not doing creation. He's not doing maintenance. He's not doing annihilation. He's not doing any of those things. He's just having a good time. He's doing what he wants to do. Creation is for us. Yeah? We have we have an independent desire. Yeah? And if we misuse that independence and desire something which is not what Krishna wants in the spiritual world, then he creates a playground that you can go and pretend you're independent of Krishna. That's the material world. So that's what we're trying to do. We're pretending that we have some independence of Krishna, or we forget. Krishna first of all takes away remembrance of him, so we can live our fantasy here in trying to live independently of Krishna, not be independent on Krishna. But the fact is, we are independent on Krishna. Everything is dependent on Krishna. Everything. He's the glue. In me, everything is strung like pearls on a thread. Everything is strung on me. Without him, everything will just dissolve. It's his. It's when we breathe, that's Krishna's air. When we walk in, this is Krishna's earth we're walking on. It's his energy. Not only that, and we're made of that same energy. and the mind that we're using, the faculty that we're using, that's the Krishna's. Earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, ahankara, identity. He said, these are my energies. So we're using Krishna's energies. This is all we have to use, right? and it's not our choice. The bodies weren't our desire. They're Krishna's idea. So he's created this material energy around us with the gross and subtle body, and we're pure souls, but we're projecting our consciousness through this inferior energy to the senses, and we're trying to be dependent. But you can't be dependent. We're dependent on eyes. To see, we have to have an eyeball. So if there's a damage in the eye, you can't see. So you're dependent on the eye. And even if you have an eye, there's no light, you can't see. So you're dependent on light. Krishna, I am light. The light of the sun, the light of the moon. So we're always dependent. In every step, we're completely dependent on Krishna. But within that completely dependence, he gives independence. You have choice. Otherwise, there's no variety. We're not like no independence means a robot. You're a robot. It doesn't mean that. It means that we don't hear you're a robot. In the material world, you're a robot. When you miss you, when you think you're independent, then you become a robot. You become just a slave to our senses. But we think, the condition is, we think we're doing okay. Because we're able to stay one step ahead of misery. Krishna's created, it's dukkha-laya, it's temporary, it's full of misery. Krishna's, he's given a whole explanation of it in Bhagavad Gita. But because we can stay just one step ahead, we think we're successful and intelligent. But that's just, it's by nature dark. We need a sun, right, in the universe. Otherwise you can't exist. So, but nature is done. By nature, the body is meant to give, is awarded for suffering. That's it. The material body is awarded for experiencing suffering, and the spiritual body is awarded for experiencing spiritual bliss. But the body is always suffering in the material world. Right? We're not suffering now because we got the fan on. We're not suffering now because we ate something last night. That's all. Otherwise we'd be suffering. Right? If we didn't eat yesterday, you'd be suffering today. So nature is actually suffering. But if you can just stay one step ahead, then you're called successful. And you're thinking, I can do it now, I can do one step, I can get... So this is the Maya. Maya. We're trying to get out of the control of Maya, and if you can do a little bit, but the what is the objective? That not the objective actually, enjoying. The objective is to experience the ananda, happiness. That's what we want. It's what everyone's looking for. You can't stop that search for happiness because it's unnatural to be. Not to experience happiness. So we are ananda. We have a portion of the ananda potency, satchit ananda. It's unnatural to be fearful because we're sat, we're eternal. Why would we be? What is there to be fearful of? Fear comes from worrying about the future, and also by absorption in the material energy creates fear. So, but you can't stop this drive to be comfortable, to be out of danger, because it's unnatural. Unnatural for the soul to suffer. and it's natural to enjoy. So this is the driving force. It's these two things to control your situation. Then you can enjoy. When you control, you'll be peaceful. If you're not peaceful, you can't enjoy, Krishna says. So this is everyone is doing this, every living entity is doing this in the material world. That's all they're doing. That's all they're doing. It's a material world. It's not a very wonderful place if we understand. Krishna's given us all this information to wake us up. Because if we don't understand what the material is, you won't be able to give up your desire to try to enjoy it. If you don't give that up, how can you can know Krishna in full? If you're still attached to this idea of doing what he's doing, he's the actual controller, he's the actual enjoyer. But now we're trying to do his job. Admire. Because we cannot. We're actually controlled by that energy. as soon as we forget the actual shelter of Krishna, then what else is there? It's just the material energy is Maya. That's the only second choice. But Krishna's not like that. Although he appears and he has, you know, as a human being, he has two arms, two legs and a head. And he seems to go through the changes that everyone else goes through. He grows up and he takes birth. My head, and he grows up and he performs childish activities. He plays with his friends. He has romantic affiliations when he hits puberty. He gets married. He becomes a kshatriya. He is successful. And then he leaves. Right? So he's acting like an ordinary man. Krishna says, the fools, they deride me when I descend in the human form. So because when I, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explained all these things, when I have no need to act. I'm not in need of anything. We have a need. Right? We have a need of security and happiness. Right? Everyone, that's what we're looking for. And when we achieve a little situation, which is okay, you're feeling happy, but you can't maintain that. You can't maintain it. So it's a continuous thing. You've got to keep on moving. You're being pushed, being whipped by these clashes, or the material clashes. But Krishna's not like that. He doesn't have no need. He said, I'm not in need of anything. But still I act. So I perform duty. But why does Krishna perform duty? We perform duty out of fear. What will happen if I don't perform duty? This is a main thing. My people are religious, based fear. What will happen if I'm not religious? Go to hell, right? We have a need. We're feeling a lacking of security and a lacking of pleasure, happiness. This is the motive. This is what drives you, keeps you running in the material world. How to fulfill those two needs. If you give up those, then you'll be peaceful, then you'll be happy. But you can't give them up. You can't give up that endeavor because it's unnatural. We are peaceful, we're sad, we are blissful, we're ananda. That's your nature. So we're trying to express ourselves. But we don't know how to do it properly. So we're feeling that lacking, but we're trying to fill it in the material energy, which is temporary, lifeless, and constantly changing. It's only alive because it appears to be alive because Krishna enters into it. Otherwise, it's just manifested, unmanifesting. Right? How long will this be here for? How long will this body be for? Huh? Another 20 years will be gone. Another 5 years, this will be gone. The table, another 10 years, will be gone. Everything will be gone. Then another 100 years, this building will be gone. 200 years, will be gone. So everything is constantly. We want consistency, because we're eternal. So we're looking for consistency in a place that is constantly changing and fluxing and appearing and disappearing, manifesting and unmanifesting. So this is not a satisfactory position. So therefore we're trying to adjust it. We have a need because there's that great lacking of feeling there. But Krishna doesn't have a need. So what's prompting us to act is to fill like that gap of vacancy of security and happiness. That's our motivation. That's why we do everything. That's why we sit in the Bhagavatam class, no? Don't mind the pure unalloyed devotees amongst us, but this is why we, you know, why we're chanting Hare Krishna. We have faith that Krishna will take away all our problems and give us a blissful life. No? It's intelligent. Krishna says they're intelligent. These people are coming to me. Intelligent. They all want something from me. There's no, the pure devotees are not among those four. But he says still they're pious. Pious people. They're coming to me for their needs. And by coming to me, then, you know, you're going to the reservoir of pleasure. You're going to the shelter of the whole universe of creation. So then you feel that. You start to feel that shelter. You start to feel that peace by going to Krishna, even though we have mixed motivation. That would get. But the idea is you approach Krishna and that's purified, just like the sun purifies a dirty place. A question of time because of the sun. So our business is to keep ourselves as 24/7 and connected with Krishna. And he will do the purifying. We're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and we're doing service, we're reading, doing something. But what it is, it's the service itself that is purifying us. The means and the goal are the same. So the goal is to serve Krishna. That is absolute. So we're serving Krishna. So that aspect of it is purifying us. Purifying for the gross and the subtle. So then also the desire gradually becomes purified. So that it's purified enough, then we realize we should be doing it for Krishna, not for myself. We should be acting for his benefit. And that's perfection. Because that's why Krishna has expanded into us and given us this independence so we can serve Krishna according to our desire and according to his desire. That's perfection. We're serving Krishna now, but we may not be serving for his benefit. Ultimately, it may be for our benefit. But that consciousness will be purified by the service itself, whatever the service is. That will be purified. then we can appreciate Krishna. That Krishna is his body. We're thinking we're the body and we're not. That is our problem. But Krishna is his body. So when he does it, it's fine. When he wants to enjoy his senses, it's fine because he is his body. When we do it, we get into trouble. We get implicated. Then we have to take breath again. You satisfy the senses of satisfaction. The satisfaction, you become attached. You become attached, you have to take breath again. To get the result. But Krishna doesn't work like that. They're his laws. They don't work on him. They work for him. The modes of nature, they work for him. So he's not obliged by those. So his motivation is different from our motivation. So therefore he says in Bhagavad Gita, I have no need. I don't need to work. I have no need. So I don't have to. Why should I follow any duty? I have nothing to gain. I have no need. We have need. We have to follow duty if you're pious. Krishna, I don't know. But still, I follow duty. You see? He does duty. He's very religious. Because if I didn't, he said, then I will put the whole world into ruination. They say, Krishna's great. He does like this. We'll do like that. Well, you can't imitate that. Just like it says, the great souls, the great Bhagavatas, or the Uttama Adhikaris, they act sometimes like the Madhyams. The Madhyam Adhikari. Just like when we worship in the deity, we worship in the Pancharatriki system. Baidi Sadhana. So even if a person is in what's the Was it spontaneous? What's the terminology for spontaneous? Huh? Another one? Uttama. Uttama. So in the Uttama platform, it is spontaneous platform. If you worship in the temple, you still follow the rules of Vaidisadana, of the Vidhi, of the temple. You follow, although on that platform you don't, you follow your heart. You worship according to your heart. But externally, you follow the rule. Because otherwise people would say, look, he's advanced, he does like this, we should do like that. So therefore, Krishna says, to set an example, then I act. So that common people will follow. Whatever a great man does, common people will follow. So also like that, the devotees should do, the pure devotees also act like that. And it's like Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada mentions in that purport of Bhagavad Gita, in that connection, that he said, and for the self-realized soul there is no duty to perform. And the purpose of duty is self-realization. Right? Purpose of the following all the rules and regulations is realization. Realization means feeling, direct perception. That's the only way you can understand spirituality, is by direct perception. So, person who is on that platform, self-realization, it means he's understood he's not the body. He's identifying with the soul, spiritual. Then he has no duty to perform. Because duty is rules, generally, all the rules we follow, the religion, they're meant to purify one from passion and ignorance. Because passion and ignorance are very difficult to practice spiritual life. In the mode of goodness, it's not a hindrance to practice in spiritual life. But passion and ignorance are, so therefore, you come, it's always recommended you come to the mode of goodness, but the idea is you want the actual realization, you want that experience. So for the self-realized person, it says he has no duty to perform, and he has no need not to perform. Whether he performs or not, it's the same thing. So he performs the duty, because he's indifferent. Whether he performs it or not, it doesn't make any difference, because he has nothing to gain from it. He's already achieved that goal of realization. So he has nothing to gain from following rules. He's already followed the rules. He's got the objective. But still he follows the rules, because then for the sake of common people. For his Krishna, he is the perfect. Everything is the supreme perfect. Everything is coming from him. Everything is moving under his desire. So he has no duty to perform. He has nothing to gain. Whatever he wants, it happens automatically, just by his itching, by his desire. What time is it? I think this clock has stopped, isn't it? 7:30. Sorry? 7:30. Oh, it's right. So therefore, it's difficult to understand. Krishna is difficult to understand, because he doesn't. He's not motivated like we're motivated, and we see everything in our terms. Or if I would do it like this, I would do it like that. Why is someone doing it? Why is Krishna doing it like that? So we think, you know, because we would do it like that because of the security and the happiness we'd achieve from it. But those things are not there, because Krishna's not looking for them. He has them. He has security. He has no threat. What is Krishna afraid of? Huh? No armies. Huh? No mad elephants. Huh? No demon kings. No universal control demon controllers. He has no fear of them. Why should he? They're all his creations. They move as he wants them to move. He's given them independence, but if he wants, he can take it away. So he says the reason he comes to a nine is not to a 9-8 in miscreants. He can give him a heart attack. He can stop them breathing for 2 minutes. Finish. But he comes to protect the road, and by doing so, he's showing the pastime, showing of his how great he is, how attractive he is, and we can come. We can come attracted to him. That's the whole purpose of the pastimes. Otherwise, if he didn't have the pastimes, it'd be very difficult to believe. Very difficult. If he hadn't been here in this earth, it would be very difficult to believe that Krishna was. It's just some fictional thing. Very difficult. I mean, it's difficult. It's tough now, right? Well, of course, we accept Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course. But not to the degree that we're going to, you know, selflessly surrender to him. Not to the degree that we're going to say no to Maya every single step, is it? We're not that kind of, we don't have that kind of faith or that kind of attachment or that kind of love for him, even though we know his position. So we still have to wait for that feeling to arise in the heart, the natural feeling, the love is natural, Nityasiddha Krishna Prema. That has to be revolt or brought out or uncovered, and that's done by the process of Vaidhi Sadhana. But that's, you have to wait for, there's nothing, you can't rush that only by being very, very sincere in your devotional service. That's it. This is the best thing we can do, apart from causeless mercy from Krishna and his devotees, that is. Yeah, so Krishna has no no fear. So therefore, and he's perfect in his Atmarama. So what's he going to do? Why should he do anything? Why should he do anything? He has nothing to achieve. He's already got it, but he has a position of control. He is the Supreme Controller. We think we're doing well if we own a house and it's got an air conditioner and we have sufficient income to that we don't have to struggle and we have a car. We think we're doing pretty good, right? Little, you know, a bunch of mud and glass and some plastic. We think Krishna's the whole universe is Krishna's, to do as he wants with. He's controlling the whole thing. Millions of universes. Without working. So he has no anxiety, there's no threat to Krishna. No one can take it from him. We feel threatened, right, when we have something. If we lock the door, when we go to bed at night, we lock the door. Right? Fear. And he's Atmarama. Atmarama means self-satisfied. So that you're self-satisfied, why are you going to look outside for pleasure? Why are you going to make a program for happiness? That's what we do. We make a program, we go there, we'll be happy, we buy this, we'll be happy, we wear this, we'll be happy, we drive this, we'll be happy. You're thinking like that. That will make us happy. So Krishna's Atmarama, his happiness is already there, within. So self-satisfied. So why should he act? Why should he do anything? Maharaj was traveling when he was a king to see the character of saintly persons, and he came upon the sage doing the python. He was leading a python life, snake. Pythons, big fat snakes, they're not very fast. But they just generally wait in one place and wait for some food to come and catch it. Sometimes they're in a branch and they drop on it. So they wait there for days and days, sometimes they're waiting. Krishna, everyone gets their food stuff, so sooner or later something comes past and he catches it. But he doesn't externally go out and... So he was a self-realized sage. So Prahlad says, what are you doing here? He says, nothing. He says, I can see that. He said, but you're doing nothing, but you're quite healthy. He said, I'm not always here. He said, now I'm laying down, I eat some leaves when I'm really hungry, they blow past. But I'm not always like this. Sometimes I'm sitting back on beds of silk with nice cushions, and people are fanning me. What? Sorry, I was thinking 8 o'clock. Anyways. Sorry, Prabhupada. Excuse me, Hare Sri Prabhupada.